and now evangelist David Shannon.
If we'll open your Bibles to John, the 9th chapter. Have you ever known someone that was born blind or born with some kind of ailment that would be a handicap to them, and they were in that condition for as long as you knew them? If so, you can somewhat relate to the man that we read about here in John, the 9th chapter. You see, it was hard for the apostles here, the disciples that was following Jesus, it was hard for them to relate to this man, apparently, because their first thought was not, "I'm sorry this man is like this." Their first thought was not, "I wish there was something I could do to help this man." Apparently, their first thought was, "Jesus, Master, Teacher, whose fault is it? We want to learn about this situation. Is it the sin of the mother and father? Or is it the sin of the individual himself?" And Jesus takes us right along with the disciples to the point we need to learn. You see, Jesus bypasses that by saying neither of them are responsible for this situation. And then He says, "I need to do the will of Him that sent me." You see, what I want to concentrate upon this morning is not the whys, but I need to concentrate upon the need to do the will. You see, I can waste so much time on the whys. I can waste so much time on the little petty questions and completely pass over the need to help, the need to do the will of Him that sent me. Well, what is that need? First of all, I want you to look with me there in the second and third verse. And I want us to read this verse, and I want to suggest something to you this morning, and you draw your own conclusion. In verse 2 it says, "And this disciple asked Him, saying, Master, who did sin, this man or his parents, that he was born blind? Jesus answered, Neither hath this man sinned, nor his parents." I want to suggest to you this morning to remember that it is a fact that men divided the Bible into chapters and verse. God did not write the Bible in chapters and verse. And I suggest to you this morning that this is a bad division in the verses. You see, it would be good if verse 3 was only half as long as what it is, and that verse 4 started out by saying the other half of verse 3, "But that the works of God should be made manifest in Him, I must work the works of Him that sent me." You see, some have taken this passage and they have said, well, right there in the same verse when it says, "Neither doth this man sin nor his parents," Jesus is not blaming the parents or the man, but Jesus is blaming God. Jesus says that God is the one that made this man be born blind so that years later His Son upon earth could walk by and could heal that man. I don't think we serve a God who is that manipulative. I do not think we serve a God who is going to have to reach down and to create a handicap for His Son to give service to. That's almost suggesting that there would not have been another blind person on the face of the earth at this time, so God had to create one for His Son to work this miracle. You see, I think the latter part of verse 3, what He's emphasizing is, I'm going to do God's will when He says, "But that the works of God should be made manifest so that God could be glorified." Then verse 4, I'm going to go out and I'm going to do the will of God. This morning I need to have that same attitude. I need to stop wasting so much time on the whys, and I need to start spending more time upon the need to do the will of Him that sent me. I want you to think back for just a moment. This point we're making is very, very scriptural. Think back to the very beginning of John. Did Jesus waste any time asking the people there that were throwing the marriage feast, they were the host or the hostess, how much time did He waste saying, "Now I want you to tell me why. You knew you were having this feast. Why do you not have enough wine? Now, is it because you're in a financial trouble? Is it because you just planned poorly? Why are you in this situation?" No. As a matter of fact, He just said to the servants, "Go and get the water." Think with me back to Nicodemus. Did he say to Nicodemus, "Now Nicodemus, why are you religious leaders so stubborn and so closed-minded? Why can you not see that the gospel is for everyone and that God sent His Son for the world?" No, he didn't waste much time with Nicodemus on the why. He simply spent time telling him the need that Nicodemus needed. He spent time fulfilling the need of the water into wine. We can look further into the chapter, that great illustration that we can pull so many powerful lessons out of the Samaritan woman. You tell me, how much time did he spend asking the woman why? Why are you in this mess? Don't you know that society is never going to accept you since you've had so many marriages? You are even living with a man now. Why are you in this mess? Why are you in this situation? No, Jesus didn't say that. Jesus said, what you need is, you need a drink of eternal water. We can look even to the story we studied the past few weeks about the adulterous woman. Jesus, after the people left, most of us would be tempted to turn to her and say, why? Why are you involved in this adulterous relationship? And what did Jesus do? He turned to her and He said, go and sin no more. Brethren, I need to learn today to stop concentrating upon the whys. Stop trying to find out everybody's personal little quirks and their little weaknesses and start trying to give people a Christ-like spirit. Let them know what they need. Not go out and out of curiosity and out of whatever reason, ask all the whys. Jesus said to the disciples a simple question, a simple answer. Neither this man nor his parents. And then He tells the need. I have the need to do the will of Him that sent me. Well, what is that will? Really, we can't find much about the will in this text by the words Jesus spoke. But we can learn much more by His actions. But I will point out that it is very interesting that the few words that He did say before He started the task, see if this brings to memory anything from last week. There in verse 5, when He's about to start the task of the work of the Lord, He says to them, as long as I am in the world, now notice, I am the light of the world. Here He has a man that's in blindness. He has a physical ailment. And isn't it kind of ironic or symbolic that Jesus would say, I am the light to a blind person. And He says, the world. Again, pointing out that He can help anyone. Well, what is that will of God that needs to be carried out? He continues in verse 6, when He had thus spoken, He spat on the ground and made a clay of the spittle. And He anointed the eyes of the blind man with the clay. And He said unto him, go wash in the pool of Siloam, which is an interpretation, sent. He went His way, therefore, and washed and came seeing. A beautiful story has transpired here, and we can learn, well, what is the will of Him that sent me? The first thing we can see is that Jesus spit on the ground. Probably with His fingers or with a stick, He mixed the clay up into kind of like a mud. And He anointed the eyes of the gentleman there. Now, I want us to notice something here. Jesus healed other blind men in His ministry. Why did He heal this man in this way? He'd healed other blind men and did not spit upon the ground. He did not make a little, some sort of clay mixture with spit. Is there something magical here? If the clay would have not been there, would Jesus would have said, I'm sorry, I want to heal you, but I need clay to perform this miracle. No, I suggest to you that this act was, as John refers to it, it was a sign. You see, I believe firmly that Jesus could have spoken and given that man vision. But He wanted it to be a sign for those around. Well, what do you think that sign was? Think to His audience here. His audience that's going to learn about this is going to be a Jewish audience. An audience that concentrates heavily upon cleanliness and uncleanliness. An audience that would look upon a man spit as being very unclean. And here Jesus takes what is considered a very much unclean and He performs the works of God. Think how that will affect them. You see, I believe all throughout John we can easily see that Jesus is trying to make the Jews realize you must leave your old traditional past. No longer are we concentrating so heavily upon the clean and the unclean, because now all people are clean. God so loved the world. The world. No one is a chosen select few. Your traditions of what is clean and unclean is no longer there. Jesus uses the way He carries out this miracle to teach a powerful lesson. But also, it doesn't stop there with the works. He continues by telling the man to go down into the pool and to wash. Well, again, could we say that Jesus could not heal this man if that pool would not have been there? No, I think He could have healed him. But the fact is, I need to learn this morning two powerful things. The power was in the one who gave the commandment, and the power was received because the one who received it obeyed it. You see, the fact is, I feel sorry for people in that day probably, because I want you to imagine with me how many people probably came to that same spot on the ground that very same afternoon and spit upon the ground and mixed up a little ointment there and rubbed it upon deaf ears or rubbed it upon a lame leg or a lame arm. And they probably went down to that same pool and they washed just hoping that that would cure them. But it didn't. Why? The power was in the one giving the commandment. And the power was because the one heard the commandment, obeyed it. Again, going back to point number one, you and I can spend a lifetime asking questions why and never follow through with obedience, but we will not be saved. Just as if that gentleman would have said, "Now listen, Jesus, I just cannot stand your spit upon my eyes. Why must you do that? Jesus, I'm not going to go down there and wash in that pool because you really aggravated me. I don't like this ointment on me. Why must you do that?" He would have never been healed. You and I can waste time asking question after question of Jesus, why? Jesus, why do you want me to come together upon the first day of the week? I can be just as faithful if I come together every other Sunday. Jesus, I just don't understand it. It doesn't matter how long we ask. It doesn't matter how good of excuses we can give. The fact is, the power comes from God and to those who obey. You see, you could probably ask me many questions this morning about the Lord's Supper that I could not answer. Now, we know enough to know that it's commanded. We know enough about the Lord's Supper to know that we have example of it being upon the first day of the week, that we are to partake and to think of the death, burial, and resurrection. But you could ask questions that we could not answer here this morning. But nevertheless, I still need to do what I understand. The same is true about baptism. I can't answer every question that's ever been asked about baptism, but I can tell you it's commanded. I can tell you it's a part of salvation. I can tell you from Romans 6 that it's symbolic of the death, burial, and resurrection, where Jesus took the sins of the world and He was buried and He rose again free from those sins. Just like we take the sins of our life into the watery grave of baptism, we rise again free from those sins. But I can't answer every question you might have this morning about baptism. But I need to learn not to waste time on the whys. Because the fact is true. We can waste a lifetime asking why. Jesus said, "Don't spend time on the whys. Do the will of Him that sent me." But I want us to notice one more point before we leave this morning. Look with me there back again to the fourth verse. When He said there in the fourth verse, I must work the works of Him that sent me while it is day. Notice that last part. While it is day. The night cometh when no man can work. Brethren, I better believe today with all my heart that opportunities pass. I want you to think of the seriousness in Ephesians 5, in verse 15, 16, and 17. Very short verses, but notice the emphasis here. See then that you walk circumspectly, not as fools, but as wise. Well, how do I walk as a wise man? Redeeming the time because the days are evil. Wherefore, be ye not unwise, but understanding what the will of the Lord is. Brethren, I must believe that to do the will of God, first I must know what that will is. And second, I must hop to it. I must do it now because I'm not promised tomorrow. I don't know exactly when that night's falling, when no more will be done. Jesus said here, when He looked over at the man, when the disciples asked the question, He looked over and in a sense, in an indirect way, He said, don't waste time on the question of why. He says, let's spend time doing the will of God and let's do it now. Because we don't know what tomorrow holds. Now you see, He had a very, very good reason to wait till tomorrow. You see, He had already, just in the previous chapters here in John 9, and or in the previous chapters to this, He had already been in conflict with these people because He had done certain acts on the Sabbath. Wouldn't you know it that it's the Sabbath again? Here it is, Sabbath time. And Jesus is about to heal another man. I'm sure that His disciples wanted to say, Jesus, you'll never learn. Can't you just wait till the morning? We'll come here first thing in the morning. We'll set up an appointment with this man. And we'll come back and you can heal him. And then the Jews will no longer be upset with you. But Jesus put the emphasis upon, I must do the will now. Today. Before night falls. Why? Because He was trying and striving desperately to teach a lesson that we all must learn. The point is simple. Opportunities pass. Oh, I'll wait until I feel a little more comfortable with myself about this subject. Opportunities pass. I'll wait until I have just a little more time. Opportunities pass. I'll wait until I feel like that the time is just perfect. And when everything is just perfect and all the ducks are in a row, opportunities pass. You know, just a few years ago, the song was popular on the pop artist. One of the pop artists had the song and it taught a powerful lesson. The Cat's in the Cradle and Silver Spoon. And it talked about the little boy who his father gave him a ball and he said, come on, Dad, let's go out and let's play. He said, son, I'm sorry, I'm busy today. I got trains and planes to catch. And he was on his way. And as he walked away, his son looked at him and said, Dad, someday I'm going to grow up and be just like you. And the song goes on and describes that, and then it comes back to another verse. And the son has grown now. And the father says, son, I hardly know you. Let's sit down. Let's spend some time together. And the son says, Dad, I just come up to get the keys. I got to be on my way. And he walks off and the father says, son, you grew up to be just like me. Brethren, opportunities pass. We can neglect things that are important today and don't think that we'll come back to them. Opportunities pass. Don't think, I'll be a faithful Christian tomorrow. Opportunities pass. Jesus taught a powerful lesson when He said to these people, don't concentrate on the wise. Concentrate on doing the will of the Father and do it today. Do it before night falls. Ask yourself, where is your spiritual life? Are you concentrating upon the little petty questions? Or have you given yourself to Jesus? Do the will of God and do it this morning. If we can help you in any way, we pray with you and for you. If you want to ask forgiveness of the church and of God, we want to help you. Today's the time. If you're not a child of God, oh, you may not have all the answers. That's okay. None of us have all the answers. But if you at least know that you want Jesus as your Savior, you know that you want to turn away from the sin in your life, you know that you can confess before men that Jesus Christ is the Son of God and that you want those sins washed away in a watery grave of baptism, do it today.